Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI mourns the death of four Roma children in an illegal camp and appeals for a more just society. The spokesperson of the community of Sant'Egidio in Rome speaks about the predicament of so many Roma persons in Rome and in Europe. And we hear about an oasis of peace and spirituality in the ravaged nation of Zimbabwe. Pope Benedict XVI is calling for a more just society following the deaths of four gypsy children who were killed on the outskirts of Rome when their makeshift shelter burnt to the ground. The Pope made his appeal on Sunday before reciting the Midday Angelus together with those gathered in St. Peter's Square. These included the parents of the deceased children. The fire erupted last Sunday night while the four children aged between 3 and 11 were sleeping. Charles Collins has this report.
The three boys and one girl, ranging in age between 4 and 11, died when their tiny shack was consumed in flames in an unauthorized encampment on the outskirts of the city.
Davanti a questa esigenza, ad esempio, il pietoso caso.
The Holy Father said the incident forces us to ask ourselves whether a society more united and fraternal, more consistent in love, that is, more Christian, could not have avoided such a tragic event. He said the question applies to many other painful situations, less or more well-known, that occur every day in our cities and our countries. The Holy Father's remarks came during his discourse on the Gospel of the Day, which was the Sermon on the Mount, which includes the Beatitudes.
Immense is the wisdom of the Lord, we proclaimed in our liturgy today. As the Blessed Virgin Mary entrusted her entire life to said wisdom, may we too place our lives completely under the guidance of God's law of love. Entrusting you to Mary's motherly care, I invoke upon you and your families God's blessings of peace and joy.
Thanks there to Charles Collins for that report. Meanwhile, the community of Sant'Egidio in Rome last week held a prayer vigil to remember Sebastian, Patrick, Raul and Fernando, the four Roma children who burnt to death last Sunday. As Charles mentioned in his report, the children aged between 3 and 11 died as they slept in their makeshift shack in an illegal camp on the edge of Rome. Some 150,000 Roma reportedly live in Italy, with some 100 camps in the province of Rome. Wednesday was also declared a day of mourning for the city, because this grief, said Sant'Egidio, is the grief of the whole city and is also a sign of welcome to the many Roma families who do not feel welcome here. I asked Mario Marazziti, the spokesperson for the community of Sant'Egidio, to explain why they decided to give life to a prayer vigil for the children who died last week.
I think it is 30 years that in Rome and step by step in other parts of Italy and other countries too, Sant'Egidio is at the side of the gypsy, of the Roma people, schooling and trying to create a livable life. So we are in all the camps, schooling. We are trying to create a first generation that enters in society without problems. But every day, while we are doing this, some of the shacks are destroyed because they are illegal or they are thought to be bad by the population. And so we start again and again and again. It has been going on for 30 years. So they were friends of ours. So we decided to ask Rome to have a day of mourning, and the mayor of Rome accepted, of course, and to have a vigil, because we have to stop and think, and we have to remind ourselves that they are human beings and not subhuman beings.
I read your press release. It's shocking. It says that most Roma people in Rome and in Italy have a life expectancy that doesn't really exceed 50 years. How is this possible?
Well, when you live in shacks and you have electricity wires that are in the field, when you do not have heating system, when the water is far away, so you just live as people used to live in Italy in the 19th century in the countryside. And this is the life expectancy. This is like Burkina Faso. This is like some African countries. So these are millions of days of life stolen from the Roma people life. And even when there are some episodes of illegality, this is the main, the most important thinking that should be inside everyone's mind. Because first we have to give the simple human right to live, to have a life. Then if there is some problems of illegality, we have to deal with that as we deal with normal citizens. So who must be punished or persecuted, and the others must be helped. And normally for the Roma people, this is not the normal way of thinking. So if there is a father or a mother that commits a crime, and very often these crimes are just related to poverty, it is normal for the population, for the authorities, under the pressure of the population, and there is no leadership that is capable to resist to these bad instincts, that all the family or all the group or all the camp must be moved. So it is as if in one building, in one big block, one person commits a crime and all the building is destroyed. Nobody thinks that for the Gypsy people, for the Roma people, the same needs and rules that should be applied to ourselves must be applied to them.
This, of course, means that the Roma children have difficulty in going to school. It means dispersing families and communities.
Well, the four children that died a few days ago, that family, over the last 10 years, had been moved 30 times. It means every 4 months. How can you go to school? And what is the advantage for society for that? First, every destruction of a camp is an investment of people and money. Then they move to another place and create another illegal place. And then any program, even of monitoring against illegality, becomes more difficult for police. When we are schooling children, helping children to go to school and then to be better pupils, because in the afternoon they have a supplement of schooling given by the community of Santa Gita for free, then they stop going to school and we have to restart every time, every time, every time. It is always against security and it is always against a real solution. And this is the strange story we call the Penelope texture, how do you fabric, or l'Araba Fenice. So an illegal camp is destroyed and, of course, like a mushroom is. Because either you destroy people and you have to decide that you are a society that wants to kill people, that want to annihilate people, want they disappear. But if they are people, they need to live somewhere.
It was interesting, I read in your press release also that you're asking media operators to change their language. How can they do this?
Yes, we have had a mental and language change over the years. So media normally say it is not decoro urbano, urban decor, to have these shacks. And it is used for the Gypsy people, for the Roma people. It is used normally a language that is used when you have to clean a place from something that is dirty. So the language, instead of focusing on the problems of the people, focuses on the problem of urban decor. So somehow the feeling that is growing among the population, because in times of crisis it is easy to direct the bad feelings in a direction that finds a scapegoat, it always happened in history, matches with a language that thinks and describes the Roma people as toxic waste. So we must not have toxic waste by our homes. And if this is the general way of speaking, any solution even proposed by an administration becomes almost impossible. This is why also the so-called plan for the Roma people that thinks that 13 big villages are created in Rome, about 600 people each, is the result of many failures, and somehow it's already wrong. Not because it has a wrong target. The target is to give better conditions of life. But the camps are too big, and so problems of cohabitation, living together, can be more than average. And there is no need to have only 13, but you could have 20, 25, smaller. But this has become impossible because any time that you point out and find an area, it is easy that political forces who wants to exploit these bad feelings says not here. So we are already at the end of a process where the good solution is in a narrow street.
So what are you asking the local municipality and also, I think, the EU, if I'm not mistaken?
The real solution for the Roma people is, one, to find security shelters that mean, in a reasonable amount of time, normal homes for the Roma people. So we can have an intermediate moment in which we have these villages and so on. But the real, real solution is that they are homeopathically inside normal society and have normal homes. Contemporarily, a full support for schooling that also includes some grants to encourage families not to encourage children or teenagers to use part of the time just begging or
really
trying to find.
It's the key, isn't it?
It is the key. Schooling is the only way to create a new generation, and grants is the only way where you have dropouts entering society. Otherwise, it is not possible. All this must happen contemporarily. Because if you have different steps, different timing, they will keep destroying the bad housing, moving children that will stop to go to school, and so on. And you start again the vicious circle.
In a land ravaged by injustice and poverty, torn by the pain of its people, an oasis of peace provides serenity and strength to those who inhabit it, and hope to those who come by. The nation is Zimbabwe, and the oasis I am speaking of is the Benedictine Monastery of Christ the Word. It's in a town called Macheke. I looked it up on the internet and discovered it's in the province of Mashonaland East, some 100 kilometres southeast of the capital Harare. It's a farming area where tobacco and other crops once flourished. Yes, there is a reason I have chosen to focus on such a remote place today. And the reason is that one of the Benedictine monks who lives there, Father Richard Field, was passing through Rome and agreed to come and tell me about his life and his work at the Macheke Monastery of Christ the Word.
The Zimbabwean bishops invited Ampleforth to make a foundation in Zimbabwe.
Yes, Father Richard himself is originally from Ampleforth Abbey in York, England.
And it arose because in 1992 there was a conference of Southern African Benedictines, Bokoza, in Zimbabwe at Chishuasha, the diocesan seminary. And I think that was because at that time various people objected to meeting in various countries and Zimbabwe was seen as neutral ground. And during the conference, somebody said, it's very curious having a Benedictine conference in Zimbabwe when there aren't any Benedictines in Zimbabwe. So they said, well, perhaps we'd better invite some. And one of our monks, Father Mark Butlin, who does a lot on international monasticism, helping monasteries set up in developing countries, he was there at this conference. And I think it was partly through him that the bishops wrote to Ampleforth and said, would you be interested in making a foundation in Zimbabwe?
The monks, Father Richard explained, then took 4 years to research the project.
The bishops had said, we do not want you to run schools. We do not want you to run parishes. We want you to be a centre of spirituality. Now, at that conference, the Precious Blood Sisters had been invited as observers, because although they're not Benedictine, they were founded by Abbot Fanner, a German Cistercian who had also founded the Marin Hill Missionaries. Cistercians, you may know, are the very strict Benedictines. So they were there, and they said, well, if they do come, we can offer them a building and a site to start with, which was a two-storey building which, despite being built by the Jesuits, was actually known to them, called the monastery. And the idea was that we should go there. But during the 4 years that we were researching the project, the sister's farm manager came to them and said, could he use another building and convert it to a house for his family and himself. Because before the war, which in Zimbabwe means before the independence struggle in the late 70s, the sisters had run not just a girls' school, which is still there now, but a boys' boarding school and a hospital and so forth. And then they'd all been evacuated during the war. And when they came back, just opened the girls' school. So this boys' dormitory was redundant. While he was doing this rebuilding, the sisters had their annual financial audit, and their accountants came to them and said, "We have discovered that your farm manager has been embezzling money and livestock." So the sister said, "Oh, yes," and did nothing until he'd finished. And then Les Armentemans said, "Our accountants tell us that you have been embezzling money and livestock." "Oh, the police are coming tomorrow." "Oh." So overnight, he and his family disappeared, and 2 months later we arrived, and they said, "Here's a nice new building."
Thus, 4 months from Ampleforth, journeyed out to Zimbabwe. And since then, Father Richard told me, they have built a church, a guest house, and a couple of other small buildings close to the original one.
I remember in chapter when we were discussing the project, and one of the Ampleforth monks said, "Well, if they aren't going to run schools and run parishes, what are they going to do?" And the abbot at the time said, "Well, they might do some desktop publishing. They'll probably keep chickens and so forth." To which this monk said, but Ampleforth monks don't keep chickens. To which the abbot was able to reply, "Well, Father Barnabas does." To which another monk replied, sotto voce, but everybody could hear him, "He doesn't keep them very long," twisting an imaginary neck in his hands as he said this. So four monks came out in 1996. There have been one or two changes in personnel since. But Father Robert, who is now the prior and was the prior, the founding prior, Father Robert Igo, and Father Barnabas Pham, who keeps chickens, and as well as a lot of goats and geese and rabbits and ducks, so that we're self-sufficient in meat, more or less, and fruit and vegetables. And then I came out in 2003, and I then went and did the religious formation ministry course in Dublin. And now the oldest of the community, Father Alban Crossley, he went back to England. So now we're three monks.
Three of the original monks, he pointed out, because in the past year or so, the small Benedictine family has grown to include Father Joseph Denala, the very first Zimbabwean to make his Benedictine vows in Zimbabwe, Brother Placid Mavuru, and Boniface Mutumufu, who was recently clothed as novice.
There's a four-year programme before that happens. 1 year as a candidate, 1 year as a postulant, 2 years as a novice, and then simple vows for at least 3 years, after which he can make perpetual vows, solemn
vows.
Where
would these men make their formations?
With us.
With you.
And later on, after solemn vows, they would probably do some other courses elsewhere.
Father Richard observed the monastery is slowly but steadily growing, its roots reaching down into a new land.
Have you stayed true to your original aim, which was one of being a centre of spirituality?
I think so. A lot of people come to make retreats with us, lay people, religious sisters, priests, diocesan priests, often for a week, and they would normally come to our liturgy, and one of us would probably spend an hour or so each day with them while they're with us. And partly because there are so few of us, we try to be very faithful to the office. The day starts at 5 o'clock with matins or the office of readings. Vigils, which goes on for about 35 minutes. Some psalms and then a couple of readings. And then we go and make a do-it-yourself breakfast. And then at 22:07, we have Lourdes, which we sing. For about 20 minutes, again, four psalms and short reading prayers, followed by Mass. And then at 8 o'clock, we have half an hour's lectio, which we do ourselves in our rooms. And then from 8:30 till 10 o'clock is manual labour time. So people might be working in their garden. At the moment, Boniface, our postulant, and myself have been making some shelving for a new storeroom. We've also sometimes spent quite some time on improving our water supply. And then 10:15, we have terse, which lasts for about 8 minutes. And then people might have tea or coffee, and then do some study in rooms or some teaching. There are courses going on in scripture, in church history, in monastic history, in the rules Benedict for candidates, and the catechism of the church. So different ones of us will take in liturgy. We'll take different responsibilities for that. And then 12:45, we have sext, which is the sixth hour of the day, again about 8 minutes, followed by a sort of soup and salad lunch, very light lunch, which is a talking meal. And then people can have a siesta if they want until 2:30, when we have noon, the ninth hour of the day. And then manual labour in the afternoon again, cup of tea at 4, and then vespers at 5:30. Lasts about 25 minutes, again sung. And then supper at 7:15, and then compline at 8 o'clock, unless it's a big feast the next day, in which case we have vigils and have a long sleep until 6:30 next morning.
Is the monastery set in a community? Are there Zimbabweans living around you, and do you interact with them in any way?
It's on this mission site owned by the Precious Blood Sisters, who have this boarding school for 500 girls, and we're between them and the teachers' houses. Apart from them, there aren't very many people in the immediate locality. We celebrate a Mass every other Sunday up in the mission church for the girls, if they're there, and for the teachers and what local people come. Otherwise, we have all our liturgy in our own monastery church. And as we get bigger, we've identified a site still on the same mission site, which very happily is called Monte Cassino, reflecting its own Cistercian antecedents. And we have identified a site about 1.5 kilometres further in, so it's a bit more separate from the school. And we're about 1.5 hours drive from Harare, which means that we're not immediately surrounded by heaps and heaps of people. And in fact, a lot of the people who come to us to make retreats are working very, 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 very hard in schools, in hospitals, in missions, in parishes. And I think probably 80% of them remark on the peace and the quiet and the silence. And Abbot Timothy coined the phrase, supporting the front line. And as a centre of spirituality, to answer your question, I think that's what we're trying to do.
Are you happy in Zimbabwe?
People quite often ask me that, and I say I'm not sure that happy is the right word, but I am very content to be there and count myself very fortunate to have the opportunity of a completely new way of life at my age.
Zimbabwe is one of the countries we think of because a lot of the people in Zimbabwe are very poor. They don't have basic necessities. They're people with no food, with no water. The education system has broken down. Does the suffering of the people of Zimbabwe enter your monastery in any way? Is there an exchange?
It's interesting, the three categories you mention actually cover three areas where we try to help. Father Robert, who is the prior, used to be a nurse, had trained as a nurse, and he looks after people who come to the door with all sorts of medical problems.
They know they can come to him?
Yes, they do. and he's just been trying to get grants for, because two grants have dried up, for supplying some of them with ARVs, or with supplying some of them with money for bus fares to go to two local hospitals where they can get the ARVs, for with money to get some decent food, because, as you may know, antiretrovirals are no good if they aren't supported by a decent diet. So that's one area. People also come to us once a week for food, and we liaised with the local parish and have a committee of four ladies. Women are usually much more dependable on knowing what's what,
right,
in this area.
Is it a kind of a soup kitchen?
No, we don't. No? We just supply the basics, not a meal. But we give them a series of chits, which they can give to people who can then come every week just for a small amount of mealy meal, sometimes some cooking oil or some sugar or some salt or some soap or some matches. And it's not so much for each person that it makes it worth their while to walk 7 kilometres from Macheke, unless they really need it. And there are a lot of people who do. Notably, a lot of grandmothers who are bringing up children because whose parents have died of AIDS. And the third area where we try to help is, which you mentioned, is education. And that's due to people overseas sending us money. And we have been able to support, up until now, about 60 children at the primary school, where the fee per term is now $15, and a similar number at the high school in Macheke, where the fee every term is $25. And over the years, some of these have gone on to tertiary education, and until now, we've been able to support some of them, about 10 or so. But actually, just before I came out, our funds ran out.
What about the environment? It's a very beautiful country. I just recently did an interview with someone who said that the wildlife is also a victim of the situation of the poverty. Wild animals are being eaten. There's deforestation. The biodiversity is suffering. Do you have that feeling at all?
Not at first hand, but when people can't buy paraffin, either because it's not available or because they haven't got the dollars to buy it, the only thing they can do is cut down wood. And there are certainly some woodlands that have been stripped. And similarly, they will sometimes kill wildlife which they wouldn't have needed to otherwise.
When I spoke to Father Richard, he was awaiting the renewal of his residency permit. I just had to ask him if he hopes to stay.
Yes, I do. I think I'll probably stay either until we're no longer welcome, or if I become so old and infirm that it's a burden on the community to look after me. I mean, I think if Alpaforth had been invited to make a foundation now, we would probably have said, well, it's not a very prudent thing to do. But I think having gone there when we did, we're now very determined to stay.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow. So join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.